drops charges
against... Good evening. Alabama drops charges against a pregnant woman who lost her baby after she was shot. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. A federal judge blocked Ohio from enforcing a new law that would effectively ban most abortions in the state. A U.S. district judge in Cincinnati issued a preliminary injunction against enforcing the Heartbeat Protection Act, saying it imposed an unconstitutional undue burden on a woman's right to obtain a pre-viability abortion. The law was passed by the Republican-controlled state legislature and was slated to take effect on July 11th. It was designed to stop doctors from performing abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected. This can occur 6 weeks into a pregnancy before many women know that they are pregnant. Under the law, violators could face up to a year in prison. And in a landmark turnabout, in a trademark turnabout, President Trump says his administration had not dropped its efforts to add a contentious citizenship question to the 2020 census. Trump contradicted statements made by his own officials, including Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. The U.S. Supreme Court last Thursday blocked Trump's plan to add the citizenship question, saying administration officials had given a contrived rationale. Administration officials, including Ross, said on Tuesday that the census forms were being printed without the citizenship question, but Democratic U.S. Representative Carol Maloney says both the Justice Department and Commerce Secretary had confirmed to her office that the printing process will move forward without the citizenship question. Also on Wednesday, Alabama prosecutors dropped charges against a woman who lost her unborn baby in her fifth month of pregnancy when she was shot during an altercation, the case that brought national attention to the state's legal protection for fetuses. A Jefferson County grand jury indicted Marche Jones, 28, for manslaughter on May 1st, concluding she intentionally caused the death of her fetus in December by starting the fight with the woman who shot her but was not charged. The National Conference of State Legislators says Alabama is among 38 states that define the unborn as persons who can be victims of homicides and assaults. The grand jury that indicted Jones declined to charge the woman who shot her, Ebony Jemison, because it found she acted in self-defense during the December 4th altercation in Pleasant Grove, just west of Birmingham. Jones has been freed on bail. In a U.S. Border Patrol facility in El Paso, Texas, labels on holding cells indicate whether migrants have been selected yes or no for a new Trump administration program that sends asylum seekers to wait out their U.S. court hearings in Mexico. Democratic Congresswoman Nanette Barrett, who saw the signs on Monday during a tour of the station, said a cell labeled yes was filled. There was nobody in a cell labeled no. Under new Trump administration policies, CBP officers increasingly are tasked with making sensitive decisions about the fate of migrants, even as they struggle with the pressures of increased arrivals and heightened and sometimes highly critical public scrutiny. Tensions boiled over this week as visiting legislators, including Barrigan and U.S. Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez publicly denounced the conditions and practices in Texas Border Patrol detention facilities. Adding to critics' concerns about the officers' sensitivity, the investigative news organization ProPublica reported Monday here that a private Facebook group for current and former officers mocked migrant deaths and posted other derogatory comments. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security's acting secretary, Kevin McAleenan, ordered investigation into the group and said that the social media activity was disturbing and inexcusable. Representative Yvette Clark of Brooklyn spoke with WBAI on Wednesday in a wide-ranging discussion and reminiscence of her predecessor, the late Representative Major Owens. Clark says the racism shown in the border agents' posts needs to be addressed by those responsible for the Border Protection Agency.
The racism that we are, blatant racism that we are all being subjected to right now, the xenophobia, the homophobia, you know, the misogyny. I think that Congressman Owens would be livid and would have a full barrel of righteous indignation focused on this administration and what it's doing to the American people right now.
Isn't that a private posting on Facebook that nobody else was going to see? Sure, some people might say the wrong thing or things they wouldn't want to be in public, and here's a news agency digging in there and finding it. You don't think it was unfair to do that, that they really needed to discover what was going on there?
There's a lot of unfairness going on in our society right now. Here's what I'm concerned about. Yes, it was a private posting, but it was brought to light. And with that information, we have an obligation to the American people to make sure that we have, border protection agents that are not imbued with these types of ideologies. That is very dangerous, and we have an obligation to speak out against it. The method of how we got that information, you can call it whistleblowing or what have you, these are public employees. They have a responsibility to adhere to the Constitution of the United States and to go about their duties in keeping with the law. Now, what we heard was a lot of rhetoric. We don't know whether their actions are reflective of that, those who are currently in active duty. But I would say that because we don't know that, these individuals who are currently in the force need to be suspended until we can determine whether, in fact, there hasn't been a record of abuse of individuals that they've come in contact with.
Do you actually expect any shame from the White House to be easily shamed, this White House?
I don't. But that doesn't stop us from, creating a space where we are confronting it. There's no way that we can give in to this type of authoritarianism that's taking place. This is a democracy. And in that, there's a public trust. Need to make sure that we are very vocal in confronting this every time we see it.
And just to wrap up, are you happy with the response from their superiors of these people at the Border Patrol? Are they going to do the right thing? Or have they assured you they're going to do the right thing on this?
We are out of session at the moment. However, we've heard some statements of holding people accountable. We're going to hold those who hold those people accountable. I'm a member of the Homeland Security Committee, so I'm looking forward to a hearing to find out just what actions have been taken to rectify this. And we won't stop until we know that the public is safe.
Representative Yvette Clark of Brooklyn will be hearing more from her later in this newscast. In international news, North Korea's mission to the United Nations accused the United States of being more and more hell-bent on hostile acts against Pyongyang on Wednesday, that despite President Trump wanting talks between the two countries. Earlier this week, the two leaders made history when Trump became the first sitting president to step over the border, separating the two Koreas since the end of the Korean War 65 years ago.
Good to see you again. I've never expected to meet you at this place. If you step forward, you will be the first U.S. president to cross the border.
Following Sunday's meeting between Kim and Trump, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said a new round of denuclearization talks would likely happen sometime in July, probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and North Korea's negotiators would be foreign ministry diplomats. A professor of Korean studies at Columbia University, Charles Armstrong, says Trump can make a right decision on instinct, but he has trouble following it up with policy.
He's a man who operates on instinct. And he has a particular instinct about how to deal with North Korea that may, in fact, kind of accidentally lead us to a better outcome than we've seen so far. So I don't think he's a brilliant tactician or has a long-term strategy. But he seems to have a kind of feel for part of the problem of divided Korea, which is not just the nuclear issue. The nuclear issue, I would say, is a kind of symptom of the real problem, which is the conflict on the Korean Peninsula that was not resolved, that has been a war ongoing, in effect, for almost 70 years.
He has a feel for what really needs to be done to break the impasse that past presidents couldn't figure out?
He understands that in this case, and I wouldn't say his foreign policy instincts are universally valid by any means, but in this particular case, I think he is right in that problem can only be solved at the top level through direct dealings between the U.S. and the leader of North Korea, and that what is at stake here is not only North Korea's nuclear program, which is certainly a problem, and it's certainly something that has to be addressed, but the volatility of the Korean Peninsula, which is divided into two hostile camps, and a North Korea that feels beleaguered and besieged by the United States. So to get at the Korean problem, you have to change the nature of the relationship between North Korea and the United States from one of hostility to one of cooperation. I think he, at some level, has figured that out. One could argue he hasn't gone about it in a very smart way, but I think that breaking through that impasse is a very important step.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day, I think I've heard it said.
Yeah, that's kind of one way to look at this, sure.
Right. How would China react to this and the fear that China might not like the idea of the U.S., especially blowing things open, wide open with, let's say, one day they're an enemy and the next day they're our ally?
Well, this is one reason, probably the most important reason, that Chinese leader Xi Jinping went to Pyongyang, first time he'd been to North Korea, and met with Kim Jong-un just a week before Trump did, to tell the U.S. that China's still in the game, that China still has a role to play, it has influence in North Korea, and their interests have to be taken into consideration. So it may seem far-fetched to us, because we've had this long history of North Korea being the enemy, but one of China's deepest fears is having a small country on its border becoming allied or aligned with the United States against it. And this is more or less what has happened to Vietnam, right? Vietnam was this fellow communist country during the war, and then after the war ended in 1975, China-Vietnam relations became really bad. They even had a small border war in 1979-1980, and now Vietnam is more or less on the side of the U.S. against China. And so China does not want that to happen on its northern border with Korea. China does not want to be excluded from any deal between North Korea and the United States. The last thing they want is U.S. troops right on their border. So they're happy to keep North Korea as a buffer, but they don't want any unfriendly forces, and particularly U.S. troops, right on their border. I mean, this is what brought China into the Korean War against the U.S. back in the fall of 1950. So they're very concerned that they still maintain influence and, to the extent they can, control on their border with Korea.
And the U.S. is sort of offering almost bribes to North Korea, like, you know, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse, $20 billion, $200 billion, trillion dollars, whatever they need.
Well, that's Trump's idea. Everything is transactional. Everything is about money to this president, of course. But there are a lot of complications, and there are a lot of forces that have other ideas about how to deal with North Korea. And, of course, the nuclear issue is a very complicated one that's not going to be resolved easily. But what North Korea wants, I think, under Kim Jong-un, and it's made it very clear, is to pull their country out of poverty and really develop its economy. And the only way they can do that is if the U.S. Drops economic sanctions, which have gotten very harsh against North Korea. And so they need a breakthrough with their relation to the U.S. in order to bring the economy out of the hole it's been in for years and really develop.
Where do you see this heading?
Supposedly, we're going to have working-level discussions between U.S. and North Korean officials in a couple of weeks. While the top-level meetings between Trump and Kim are crucial, they're not everything. And if there isn't a lot of preparation at the working level between the two sides, it's going to be another Hanoi, another summit meeting down the road that's going to end up with nothing. And I think that was a problem with the Hanoi summit. And so let's hope that the people on the ground are able to work out a deal that can satisfy both sides. What will happen next, probably, I would guess, before the fall of next year, is a fourth meeting between Kim and Trump that might be able to sign a deal that's more or less in place to really resolve, or at least lead toward resolving, this problem.
Does this apply to Iran? Because he seems to be using the same tactics there.
There are some similarities, obviously, but Trump seems a lot less willing to be chummy with Iran than he is with North Korea for a variety of reasons. I mean, the Middle East is a very different issue than Northeast Asia. One of the biggest differences is that the U.S. main ally on the Korean Peninsula, South Korea, really wants the U.S. and North Korea to engage, whereas our allies in the Middle East, Israel and Saudi Arabia, don't want Iran to really come out of its shell. So the geopolitics is quite different. What Trump has said he wants is to get a better deal than the Iran nuclear deal through pressure. We'll see if that happens. Unfortunately, the Iranians could have learned from North Korea is that if you already have a nuclear arsenal, then you have a better chance of getting a deal with the U.S. So we'll see how far down the road they go now.
Charles Armstrong is a professor of Korean studies at Columbia University. The United States and other UN Security Council members have said there must be strict enforcement of sanctions until Pyongyang acts, while Russia and China have suggested the Council discuss easing the measures. An airstrike hit a detention center for migrants near the Libyan capital of Tripoli early Wednesday, killing at least 44 people and wounding dozens of others in an attack that the UN human rights chief said could amount to a war crime. The Tripoli-based government blamed the attack on forces associated with General Khalifa Haftar, whose Libyan National Army has been waging an offensive against rival militias in the capital of the war-torn North African country since April. It refocused attention and raised questions about the European Union's policy of cooperating with the militias that hold migrants in crowded and squalid detention centers to prevent them from crossing the Mediterranean to seek better lives in Europe. Most of them were apprehended by the Libyan Coast Guard, which is funded and trained by the EU to stem the flow of migrants. At the United Nations, the Security Council scheduled an emergency session for later Wednesday on this airstrike in Tripoli's Tejura neighborhood, and Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an independent investigation. Haftar's forces said they were targeting a nearby military site, not the detention center. There also were suspicions of involvement by foreign countries allied with his forces. Countries assisting Haftar include Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Russia. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. A post office in Brooklyn has been named after Major Owens, a member of Congress who represented Central Brooklyn. His successor, friend, and occasional rival, political rival, is Yvette Clark. She spoke with WBAI about Owens and his legacy.
He was known for his work on the Education and Labor Committee. He had a passion for education. He saw it as the key to unlocking all possibilities in life. And his work as a librarian, I'm sure, helped inform that. But he himself was a scholar, and he at one point wanted to be a novelist, if you'd want to believe that. And you could see that in sort of the prose and conversation that he would have in Washington, D.C. But most notably, the work that he did for the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, which had really unlocked the doors on a lot of what we have today for persons with disabilities, making all of those accommodations so that they're not leading a life of seclusion, but they're fully integrated in society, I think has to be one of his most defining moments. But I can speak to a lot of the work that he did sort of reforming the politics in Central Brooklyn and organizing on the ground to really have us focus, us being his constituents at that time and his colleagues, just designing ways in which we could eliminate poverty. He was a real crusader in that space, and education, again, was key for that.
Now, you know, I've been covering this story. What would he think of some of the, it seems the city has been failing in some ways to provide ADA access to the subways. I mean, they tried to put in the elevators, but there's so many reports coming out now that they've had a hard time keeping them maintained and actually working. What would he think now?
He'd be disappointed to see that we are not living up to our obligations on multiple fronts. But he made it possible for us to see the need for in reforming us in that way. There are many of us who continue the fight. Uh-huh. You know, there are many of us who recognize that we have to realign things in society in a way in which we can provide all those things that we value, that battle continues to this very day.
What would he be thinking about what's going on with President Trump right now?
I think Congressman Owens would have been standing there right with us at that press conference. He might have been leading that press conference in his day. These are the causes that he dedicated his public service to eliminating. The racism that we are, blatant racism that we are all being subjected to right now, the xenophobia, the homophobia, the misogyny. Congressman Owens would be livid and would have a full barrel of righteous indignation focused on this administration and what it's doing to the American people right now.
Anything you'd like to add?
We are proud that we now have a post office in central Brooklyn on St. John's Place that is now named for my predecessor to the United States Congress, the Honorable Congress Major R. Owens. And his legacy is something that I think every Brooklynite, every New Yorker, and everyone across this nation should become acquainted with, because he was a truly remarkable representative, and we owe him a debt of gratitude for the service he's rendered to us.
Representative Yvette Clark spoke with WBAI on Wednesday. And finally, Thursday is the 4th of July, the 243rd anniversary of United States independence, America's birthday. Donald Trump wants a military-style 4th, unusual in a democracy and in U.S. history, more like Russia or China than a republic formed out of a revolution against the British Empire. Tuesday, presidential spokesperson Kellyanne Conway defended her boss.
Do you know the 4th of July is a celebration of this country's independence? Are you aware of that?
I am.
You are? You know what happened in July 4th, 1776? Okay, because it doesn't sound like you're even talking about the patriotism that undergirds it. This is a public event. It's open to the public. The public is welcome to come and celebrate our great country, the greatest democracy. The Constitution, all the amendments, not just the First Amendment that seems to only interest you only, the Second Amendment, all the others, but really just the birth of this country, the greatest democracy that ever lived. I'm not going to allow you to politicize it.
Some folks are in Washington, D.C. for reasons other than celebrating American independence. Gregory Joey Johnson of the Revolution Club fought the case that made flag burning legal 30 years ago. Now Johnson says he plans to celebrate the First Amendment by burning a flag near the White House on the 4th.
He's going to have military flyovers tomorrow, and there are military flyovers going over Iran, B-52s that are nuclear equipped. This is a reality, and we've seen this movie before in terms of what they're threatening against Iran and what they did to Iraq a decade ago. And that was United States of atrocities in operation, and simultaneously in United States of amnesia, because people are told to forget it all. But I think this is a very crucial moment, because he is arrogating to himself what's traditionally been a nonpartisan celebration, and making it part of his campaign, not just for his political reelection, but the fascistization of society. This whole poison of America First. I just feel like this is a time, a moment, where people should not allow themselves to be intimidated by that, Should people have to stand strong against segregationists, against slavery. People have to fight against it and stand up and be heard. We are not calling for violence tomorrow. We're out here to make a political statement, but no one should be intimidated from being part of it and attending.
Isn't it legal?
It is. I'm imminently aware of that it's legal, because I fought a U.S. Supreme Court case 30 years ago for people to have the right to burn the flag and protest. It's called symbolic speech.
But still you get pushback, and you have to worry about how people react. You have to watch your back when you do this. Why?
You do, because people are being whipped up around this. Like I said, make America white again, make America great again, which translates into an existential threat against humanity. The need to wrench a whole different future, to wrench it out of the hands of the imperialists, and to act in the interests of humanity. But that does mean going against this America First chauvinism, absolutely.
Will there be other people down there with you doing this as well?
Yeah, I'm hoping for a group of at least 50, and hopefully more.
Gregory Joey Johnson refers to himself as a notorious flag burner. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Have a happy Independence Day.